on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Let's get you started with the headlines that you need to know. Frank Gore signing with the Jets. That's per agent Drew Rosenhaus. In a move that figures to reduce Le'Veon Bell's role, the Jets agreed to terms Tuesday with Frank Gore on a one-year contract. Rosenhaus told that to ESPN's Adam Schefter. Gore turns 37 on May 14th, third leading running back in NFL history. He'll be reunited with coach Adam Gase, who coached Gore with the Miami Dolphins back in 2018. They were also together with the 2008 San Francisco 49ers when Gase was a low-level assistant. So a little bit of a reunion and a little bit of a workload help there coming in the form of Frank Gore headed to the Jets. Next up in the headlines, Rafael Nadal. So believe it that they should just scrap the 20 season and start preparing for 2021. If given the option, Nadal said he would scrap this season entirely so that things could resume normally in 2021. The second-ranked Spaniard, who's 33 years old and has won 19 Grand Slam titles, said he'd hope to resume playing this year but doubted it could happen because of the coronavirus pandemic. His quote, "I would sign up right now to just being ready for 2021. I'm more concerned with the Australian Open than with what happens later this year. I think 2020 has been practically lost. I'm hopeful of being able to start next year." And speaking of delays due to the pandemic, Amanda Nunes and Felicia Spencer will fight in their UFC title fight now, June 6th. The UFC women's featherweight title has been moved. It was originally slated for Saturday. It's now signed for the promotion's next pay-per-view event. Next month, that would be June 6th. You can check out an article about it on ESPN.com from the great Ariel Helwani, getting you all caught up there. First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. Happy Cinco de Mayo. Yeah, I know we're all in quarantine, and so we can't celebrate the normal way, but hopefully at some time today, you'll at least be able to raise a glass and have a laugh, even if it's remote or on some sort of a web call with some friends, and celebrate Cinco de Mayo. We're asking you our question of the day, based a little bit on what we saw over the course of the weekend from The Last Dance. Whose legacy was affected the most because of Michael Jordan? Now, we saw, if you've watched The Last Dance in its entirety so far, you've seen some segments talking about, for example, even Scottie Pippen, teammates. You've seen segments talking about the rivalries. We heard from Charles Barkley, who, remember, made it to the NBA Finals but never got the coveted ring, and even said in The Last Dance, you know, there's no shame in losing to Michael Jordan. So you can look across the board. Those great Knicks teams. There are a ton of different options on this one. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I want you to tell me whose legacy was affected the most because of Michael Jordan. Not just who, but also why. You can get in on that conversation. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. Let's start, as always, with some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless has the full court cell phone coverage you need. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data. Then 2G, it's only $45 a month. Saves you up to half the cost of big carriers. Everything for less. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. And the Straight Talk comes in the form of expectations around Odell Beckham Jr. Odell Beckham Jr. has said that he's, quote, ready to have the best season of his career. Now, the question is, with everything that's going on, with the change at head coach, with new head coach Kevin Stefanski coming over from the Vikings, no more Freddie Kitchens, is it reasonable to think that Odell could have the best season of his career? Dominique Foxworth joined Max and Stephen A. to debate OBJ's effectiveness this coming season.
Freddie Kitchens is gone for a reason. If Freddie Kitchens was devoid of talent as a first-year coach with the Cleveland Browns, then we wouldn't be talking about Kevin Stefanski as the new head coach for the Cleveland Browns. We wouldn't have a new GM there as well, and Andrew Berry, who, by the way, I'm wishing all the luck in the world to. The reality of the situation is that we look at their roster, and on paper, there was no excuse to have the season that they had. You can look at certain levels of talent in terms of the wideout position. We just had Jarvis Landry on the show last week. We know what Odell Beckham Jr. brings to the table because he's a superstar talent. There is a way to look at his numbers and it not be what it's supposed to be, and we're able to look at someone else other than him.
No doubt.
If you know anything about it, if you know anything about, I'm not talking about you, Max, but if you know anything about football, generically speaking, I'm saying, then we continuously defer to the fact that, okay, this guy was open, this guy got the speed, the athletic ability, the catching ability, et cetera, et cetera. What kind of damn play calling was this? Why is this guy so inaccurate? Why does he hold on to the ball too much? Why doesn't he let go of it early? Why does he tap dance in the pocket? Why are you giving the ball to the running back instead of having them throw more? There's a multitude of things that could get in the way of a receiver's productivity with us still looking in our mind's eye and seeing greatness, but knowing that he didn't have any help.
I agree with that, but Odell Beckham, like, if he's the Deion Sanders of receivers, in other words, Deion might not have an interception that game, but wow, he changed that game because they didn't throw to his side of the field. If Odell is being bracketed, if all these resources are being thrown his way and they're not making good on the other end of the field, and the quarterback's missing, the play calling's no good, I think we will be able to recognize that. But I do want to say this about Odell. First 3 years of his career, he was arguably on pace to be the greatest receiver who ever lived, in the sense that you could put his first three seasons up against anyone in history, and at best, they're going to match it. You can't say any receiver ever had a better first 3 years than Odell, definitively. He may have been in first place. That was the pace he was on. That's when he's 23, 24, 27. He's at this point, he's supposed to be ascending, or at least plateauing as, you know, a guy in his prime. That's not what's happened. And in terms of, Dominic, you brought up, I thought he's going to have a bad season, 1,000 yards, 5 or 6 touchdowns, a lot of receivers, that's good. That speaks to the way our expectations have changed for him already. I mean, Randy Moss, a lot of attention was paid to Randy Moss. You know, there were times where he wasn't on great teams, etc. But Randy Moss, you couldn't stop him from putting up numbers. And that's the kind of talent Odell is. And that's what I think we can reasonably expect. For him to say the best season of his career, I got to see it.
Yeah, I think the most important thing that we've talked about today, Stephen A. brought up, was how Freddie Kitchens was a novice. And they're going to a coach who is a new coach also, who is a novice head coach. But Freddie Kitchens was a novice offensive coordinator. Like, a couple years ago, he just got upgraded offensive coordinator. Then next thing you know, before even having a full season of doing that, he's the head coach. And I think in football, relative to other sports, the coaching really, really matters. So you can have a season derailed for a bunch of talented players if the coach is not up to it. And we got speculation from a lot of people close to the organization before this season even started that Freddie Kitchens was not up for the job. Then we got confirmation when the season happened. I'm not hearing the same things about Stefanski. People believe Stefanski is a smart guy who has been prepared and been groomed to be a head coach and is ready. So if Stefanski can step up, I think that's what matters for this team. And I think that is also how we're going to determine if Odell Beckham had the best season of his career or not. Because even if he's getting doubled and he puts up not impressive numbers, if the other guys are able to contribute, if the offense is complimentary in that way, which is on Stefanski, and they are able to win a lot of games, we can watch the film and see that Odell is commanding a lot of attention. I will be willing to say that Odell had the best season ever. If that team can win that really tough division, I would give a lot of credit to Odell Beckham, even if his numbers aren't big.
First, take your take on ESPN News, and we continually make it sound like Odell Beckham Jr. was a failure last year. And I realize you can't just look at stats. And the funny thing about where we are now in the world is that we want to turn around and say that because you can't use stats as everything, that stats can't mean anything. I'm not willing to say that, right? When you look across the board at Odell Beckham Jr. and his production, he caught 74 balls for 1,035 yards, almost the exact same production he had the year before in 2018. His touchdowns were down. He went from 6 to 4, but over the last 2 years, his production has been almost exactly the same. I understand that we overhyped the Browns, and as a result of overhyping the Browns, we don't want to turn around and give Odell Beckham Jr. any credit. I'm just not willing to do that. The liability for the Browns last year came in the form of Freddie Kitchens. Now, does Kevin Stefanski deserve some benefit of the doubt? I don't know. He's still an unknown at that point. He's still going to be unknown as a head coach. But what we do know is that he comes with a great reputation. And the thought is that it's going to be hard for two coaches in a row to butcher the amount of talent they have there. This is, at some point, we have to look at everything that's around Odell Beckham Jr. and ask, what's the situation that he's in? The weapons in Cleveland are spectacular. And we've seen Baker Mayfield perform at an incredibly high level. So why would it be a hot take to look at Odell Beckham Jr. and feel like he's going to have a spectacular season? The question isn't, can Odell Beckham Jr. play, or will he have a great year? The question is, will that be enough for the Browns to win football games? And the answer to that can be yes. It doesn't mean that they're the best team in the division. They happen to be in a stacked division. And I think getting a wild card in the AFC is going to be more difficult this year than people expect. Through all of that, though, I expect the Browns to be better, and I expect Odell Beckham Jr. to have a much better year. And I'm saying that on top of the knowledge that last year with 74 catches for 1,035 yards, he was not in the cupboard of stink. We are making it sound like Odell Beckham Jr. was a letdown last year. He wasn't. He's going to have a bigger, better year this year in my mind, and that's only going to make the Browns even better throughout the course of the season. It's First Take, Your Take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. I'm asking you whose legacy was the most affected by Michael Jordan, by the Jordan Bulls era. Whose legacy took the biggest hit because of Michael Jordan and the greatness? I want some of your take on it. Tristan in Pennsylvania, what do you got? What's your take?
So mine isn't necessarily a hit. I would honestly call it more of a positive. I would say Hakeem Olajuwon was affected the most, not only because they're tied at the hip because of the 1984 draft, Hakeem Olajuwon going first, Jordan going third. But if you want to talk about opportunistic, whenever Jordan goes off the baseball and has his first retirement, Hakeem Olajuwon slides in there in the 94 and 95 seasons and wins the championship both years when Jordan's not there. So as far as affecting a legacy, Hakeem Olajuwon, if Jordan's there with that Bulls team, you would presume that he would probably win those two championships or at least be in the running for those two championships in the 94 and 95 seasons. And maybe Hakeem Olajuwon doesn't win those two championships.
That's a great point, because remember, the question is whose legacy was most affected. And that can be a positive or negative effect, because how differently we view certain players just by getting one championship. I think that's part of the reason that you can make a case for somebody like Charles Barkley that we saw over the course of the weekend make it to one final, not get that win in that one final. Like, how different would we perceive everything about him from a championship? By the way, JT on Twitter says the late 90s Reggie Miller Pacers teams were so great but never get the recognition because of Michael Jordan. That's a really fair point. And then Tom says Ewing, Barkley, Malone, Stockton in that order. We're talking about an era of great players that simply don't have a championship ring. And it's funny, when we talk about quarterbacks, we don't allow a quarterback to be great, as stupid as this is, if they don't have the right number of Super Bowls according to whichever expert's talking at the time. But we're willing to look at an entire era of NBA players differently because of the Michael Jordan effect. I only wonder if history at some point will do the same thing to Belichick and Brady and the effect that they've had on the rest of the NFL. I want more of your take. Whose legacy was affected the most because of Michael Jordan? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. In the meantime, we also got some new takes on Carson Wentz and the Carson Wentz situation. As Carson Wentz came out and flat out said that he's not bothered by Jalen Hurts being the second round draft pick of the Philadelphia Eagles, even though he's a quarterback, and we all know that that can turn into some drama. So at that point, Dominique Foxworth and Stephen A. had the debate on whether Carson Wentz should be worried about Jalen Hurts being drafted so high by Philadelphia.
I don't believe for one second that Carson Wentz needs to be upset, because we're talking about Jalen Hurts here, if we're just being honest. Let's understand something. Carson Wentz knows that he's injury prone. He was injured. He was en route to an MVP season, passing for 33 touchdowns that year, you know, about 3 years ago or so. Before he goes down near the end of the season, Nick Foles takes over the helm. He ultimately guides them to a Super Bowl championship the following year. The Chicago Bears, they knocked them off in the postseason before losing to New Orleans. The two playoff appearances that the Eagles had with, it was some success. Carson Wentz wasn't your quarterback because he was on the sideline. He knows that. His first playoff game was last year, and he barely lasted a half a quarter, for crying out loud, because of what I believe to be a cheap shot by Jadeveon Clowney. I don't give a damn what anybody says. I know what I saw, and as far as I'm concerned, he should have been ejected from that football game, but nevertheless, he knocked Carson Wentz out. It was what it was. If you are Carson Wentz, and this is the National Football League, due to the fact that you already got your money, you got your $107 or $109 million guaranteed, whatever it was, you've got your money. You're clearly the franchise quarterback. If you didn't have your money, then I would side with you, Max, and I would believe he's lying about being upset. But because, unlike Dak Prescott, he's already got his money and he's clearly the face of the franchise, I'm going to believe him. Not to mention this last point. Jalen Hurts Max, numbers, numbers, numbers. Jalen Hurts is a winner. He's a stud. He's an incredible athlete. By the way, he completed 69% of his passes at Oklahoma last year, 72% the year before at Oklahoma. But despite the numbers, we all saw this brother in that national championship game in the first half when he was down 13-0 and he only threw for 21 yards on 3 of 8 passing. We know that when it comes to accuracy throwing the football, we look at him and our eye test shows us there's levels to this. Carson Wentz, when healthy, has absolutely nothing to worry about in terms of Jalen Hurts being able to throw the football better than him. Jalen Hurts is a football player. He belongs in the NFL. I'm happy for him. But Carson Wentz has nothing to worry about other than Carson Wentz's health when it comes to the quarterback position. That's another reason I believe him.
Yeah, I think that you made some good points, and it's all a lot of logic that you laid out there, Stephen A., why he shouldn't be upset. But logic doesn't come into it. This is emotional. I think if you draft somebody in the second round, you're expecting them to contribute. And if somebody drafts somebody at your position in the second round, no matter how much money you've been paid, or how much success you've had, it has to feel a little uncomfortable. I'm sure he doesn't love it because they're not drafting a guy in the second round to not put him on the field. Injuries aside, it appears that they're going to put some packages together to put Jalen Hurts out there and take Carson Wentz off the field. And it shows that they do have some concern about his injury history and maybe going forward. I think that it's crazy to suggest that Jalen Hurts is better than Carson Wentz or can be better than Carson Wentz. But it's important to understand that the most success that this Eagles offense has had is with the RPOs, which Jalen Hurts is a master of. And Carson Wentz was not great in RPO game last year. That Super Bowl run with Nick Foles was all based on RPOs, which Jalen Hurts made a killing at Oklahoma running those plays where he put up Heisman contention worthy numbers in an offense that produced 2 Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks and 2 first round overall picks. So I don't think that he should be concerned, but I think there's plenty of reason out there to suggest that an emotional reaction to them drafting him would make him concerned. And it would bother me in the same way that Aaron Rodgers should be bothered. Not that they brought in a quarterback, that they didn't bring in something else that could help your team with the second overall pick. That's not a spot where you go get a gadget guy. I know Taysom Hill has been the comparison that a lot of people are making, the way they're going to use Hurst. Taysom Hill was not drafted in the second round. That's not where you draft a player like that. So I'd be upset. I'd be confused. And I know that Carson Wentz is a religious man, but that doesn't have anything to do with the way that you emotionally feel when something happens like that. When you're sitting at home and you find out that they've drafted somebody that's not going to take your job, but it's going to take you off the field. I think that's an honest emotional reaction to that situation.
First, take your take on ESPN News. Don't forget, Navy Federal Credit Union has a mission: to put members first by making their financial goals a priority. Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. Dominique making a lot of sense there. Let's remember, everybody's human. So I think it's fair to say, while you may not be worried, you're still going to react to it. And no matter what your job is today, if you make widgets, if you make spreadsheets, if somebody comes in and you find out that your boss had the opportunity to hire anybody to join your team, whether you work at a manufacturing plant or in a financial team, your boss could have hired anybody to help you with your job. And instead, your boss hired somebody that does your exact same job that's cheaper and younger. All right, how are you going to react to that? Now, that's a fair part of one portion of this conversation. But the other side of it is knowing your worth. And Carson Wentz has a contract that's already shown him his worth and has already shown him how much the Eagles believe in his worth. Because unlike the Cowboys situation, it didn't get messy. It didn't get sticky. It didn't get ugly. It got done. So if you're Carson Wentz, the Eagles as an organization have already shown you how much they believe in you. Above and beyond that, you know how much the rest of the league believes in you right now also. If Carson Wentz looks around at his situation and thinks, man, the Eagles don't love me anymore, so I don't love them. If that were to happen to Carson Wentz, understand his value around the rest of the league is still astronomical. All right. So at some point, he can look at it. He can be hurt to a certain level because I think that's a human reaction when somebody's drafted in this situation. It can be shocking. It can rub you the wrong way. It can do all of those things. You can feel all of those emotions, but still be secure knowing that the team already showed you your value when they paid you. And then on top of that, you know that you could go to 31 other teams and many of them would drop their starter in a heartbeat to have you. Carson Wentz has nothing to worry about because he understands he has the most important thing in sports: value. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're asking you whose legacy was affected the most because of Michael Jordan and the Bulls era. Joe in Florida. Joseph in Florida. What do you got? Whose legacy was the most affected?
Hey, buddy. I would say, personally, from having actually watched the games live in the 90s, watching the series against Utah Jazz back-to-back years in the final two championship cycles for the Bulls, I mean, you have the two top 50 players in NBA history in Stockton and Malone making it to the finals, facing the Bulls, but they never won a championship because of Michael Jordan and everything that was associated with them, and they never recovered after that. I mean, seeing them being devastated by Michael Jordan like that, first year I can understand Bulls had the better record, but the last year that they won it, I mean, they were actually the underdogs going up against Stockton and Malone and the Utah Jazz, having to play away and still couldn't get it done. And they just couldn't recover from that. Plus, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jason, but is there any other two members on the Dream Team that were part of the same roster besides Jordan and Pippen? All I could remember was Stockton Malone. I can't remember of anybody else, but that would be my pick. So
no, I think you're right about that, and I'll have to go back and look at the Dream Team. Maybe I'm missing something, but I think you're right there also. You know, I will say the Stockton and Malone one is interesting to me, particularly because Stockton and Malone are great players that will at some point, like so many great players, become explained players. And what I mean by that is, like, your grandpa has to tell you about how great Stockton and Malone are, and you're going to have to go back and find out about those players. Those players aren't going to live on forever because, frankly, the championships that Michael Jordan won and the legacy that that Bulls team had sort of, it quells everybody else's dynastic ability to remain, which is maybe most important to so many athletes, memorable. I'm not sure that that happens. As great as Stockton and Malone are, for me at my age, being almost 43, I remember watching their greatness and being so impressed by it. I'm not sure generations from now they'll be talked about enough, and largely part of that reason will be because they didn't get championships. I want your take. Whose legacy was most affected, good or bad, by Michael Jordan? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We want your take. You can also tweet me there. Coming up, the dust has settled from the 2020 draft, but Mel Kiper's already got his 2021 big board here and break it down next. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. ESPN News, also on your smart speakers. You can just go out there and tell your smart speakers to hang out on ESPN Radio. You can hang out with us. I'm Jason Fitz. We're asking you whose legacy was most affected by Michael Jordan. It can be good or bad, either one, positive, negative. Whose legacy most affected? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. A lot of you guys want to get in on this. Don't forget, attention SSI recipients, listen. This is really important today. If you did not file a tax return last year and you have children under 17, you have to act now to get the $500 economic impact payment per child. If you don't act by May 5th, you have to wait until next year to get those payments. So if you haven't acted now, go do it. Go to IRS.gov, enter your information in the non-filer tool by May 5th. That's IRS.gov. It's really easy. Get out there, get it taken care of. This message is produced by Social Security at U.S. taxpayer expense. We will get some of your take coming up. 888-SAY-ESPN, whose legacy is most affected by Michael Jordan. But there's a group of players that haven't even had their chance to make their legacy in the NFL yet. There were a conversation today on First Take. Mel Kiper Jr. already taking a look at 2021. I want to say Tua still. And Trevor Lawrence. We've all presumed Trevor Lawrence is the clear-cut number one. But according to Mel Kiper Jr., there's another quarterback right on his heels for the draft next year.
I think when you look at where Trevor is right now on the board, he's number one for a reason. He's had really an outstanding start to his career. Now, he didn't finish last season strong. That was the issue. Ohio State game, now granted, he went up, he got hit by Sean Wade. Sean Wade was ejected. Hey, he rallied him. LSU game, he struggled, 48% completion percentage. But I think you look at Trevor, he's there because of his body of work over 2 years. But don't forget the Alabama game and what happened late that freshman year when he was outstanding. So Associate, you can't beat the big boys while you already did it as a freshman. Well, this year is going to be important to maintain that spot because you got a major challenger in Justin Fields from Ohio State.
I'm interested in knowing, Mel, you know, when you think about Trevor Lawrence and the stature that you're giving him, I'm impressed. Because his record speaks for itself. And I was impressed with the mobility that he showed particularly at some points in the national championship game and throughout the regular season as well. He can run with the football, and I give credit where credit is due in that regard. My question to you is he a clear-cut number one guy in all of our minds because his talent is surreal enough to be that way? Or is it because there's really no one to speak of that we would consider legitimate competition to him as a legitimate quarterback on the next level?
Good question, because you think about high school, it was Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields vying for that top spot. And here we are, fast forward to college and the NFL. Here they are again, vying for the top spot. So I think they've been there for so long, Stephen A., that's who they are. They're great talents. Both are great runners. Trevor Lawrence had more rushing yards than Justin Fields. So the ability to beat you with his legs, obviously what he does as a passer. Sure, he had some struggles late. That game against LSU, he admitted, wasn't his best game. That happens, okay? I still contend Joe Burrow would have gone ahead of Trevor Lawrence if they were both in this draft. That's not a criticism of Trevor Lawrence. It's just how spectacular Joe Burrow was. Justin Fields is right there. What kind of year they're going to have? Look at the supporting cast, guys. That's the key to the equation. Guys that struggle that final year lost a lot of their players around them. I can give you a lot of names of those guys, okay? When you look at, and we talked about it with Jordan Love, we talked about it with Darnold, with Josh Allen and others, but when you look at what these guys have returning, Justin Fields doesn't have J.K. Dobbins, but Master Teague's a good back. He doesn't have two really good receivers and a third that was okay, but he's got Chris Olave, who was a spectacular player. The line, Mumford came back, so at the end, I think there's talent around him. Clemson loses T. Higgins, but Justin Ross is a really good player. Travis Etienne, running back, opted to return, but he does lose four starters on the offensive line. So how does it come together for these two? We'll determine, obviously, who the number one pick is, but it's not out of the question that Justin Fields could overtake Trevor Lawrence, because I think it's affirmed in Allidar. Always bring up that the great battles they had in the for the Triple Crown, those two great horses. And, affirmed always nudged out Allidar. Well, how will it happen with these two once we get to the finish line in late April of 2021? Right now, it's too close to call.
First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. You all know my love of the draft, and you know I consume a lot of college football. Let's have this one quick reminder. A year ago right now, nobody was talking about Joe Burrow, and we were all certain Tua Tagovailoa would be the first overall pick in the NFL draft. Instead, it was Burrow that went one with a historic season. We have to acknowledge when you have this quarterback conversation, you're talking about Trevor Lawrence and everything he's already accomplished and the greatness that he has, and I'm not taking anything away from that, but Justin Fields is going to be on a stacked team with national championship type expectations. So there's obviously the opportunity for him to show up. It's going to be interesting how it plays forward. I know we all believe that that Trevor Lawrence is going to be the top overall pick, rightfully so given where we are right now. But we have to acknowledge at least the chance that somebody else will go rocketing up the board, because it happens every year. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Whose legacy was most affected because of the Michael Jordan era? Bunch of you guys want to chime in, so let's make it happen. Artie in Florida, what's your take? Whose legacy was affected the most by MJ?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Well, I think Pippen was the most affected on his own team because he was overshadowed by Michael. I mean, I agree with the last caller as far as another team. It had to be Malone, but you know, here's what amazes me. I've been watching the Last Dance, and I don't remember any of the Bulls, including Michael, offering to give up some money for Scottie Pippen. So, I mean, they were his own teammates, and Michael was making tons of money. He could have said, hey, Scottie, here's $1 million for you. I got your back. So, you know,
but
what
why,
it is.
So let me ask you, though, why do that? Because, frankly, the Bulls were rolling in cash. They had it to give up, and there's not a hard salary cap like the NFL. So why would Michael Jordan need to give any money back? I mean, it seems like it was simply pure principle that the Bulls weren't willing to renegotiate with Scottie Pippen.
Exactly. I agree with you. I don't care for Krause. I think he was a louse myself, and they should have paid him, but they didn't pay him. So the guys on the team should have had his back and said, hey, listen, we got you. Now, before I go, I want to tell you, Otis Taylor played with the Kansas City Chiefs. He was catching balls one hand in the 60s when they won the Super Bowl. So look him up on the Internet.
I'll do it. I'll take the education on it all day long. I love that. I'll look up Otis Taylor later on today. And look, I understand the concept of, you know, nobody came to Pippen's back. I think the one thing we have to acknowledge, though, is that nobody should have felt pressured to do that, because the Bulls had the money to burn. And yes, Michael Jordan getting $33 million that year. It sounds, on the one hand, simple for Jordan to just say, you know what, I'll write you a personal check. I don't think life is that simple, number one. And number two, I don't know that that was necessarily Jordan's spot to do or anybody's spot to do when the Bulls had the money and there's not a hard cap that's suddenly preventing them from paying Scottie Pippen more. It wasn't that they couldn't pay Scottie Pippen more. It's that they wouldn't pay Scottie Pippen more. Speaking of Pippen, Cliff from North Carolina, what's your thought on whose legacy was affected the most because of Michael Jordan?
So Michael had it right, but for the wrong reasons. Scottie Pippen's legacy was affected the most, but that's because he was boosted by having Michael Jordan on his team. Without Michael Jordan playing as a part of that team, Scottie Pippen is just another Russell Westbrook. Talented, athletic player who just cannot close. The two seasons that Michael wasn't with them, they won 55 and 47 games and lost in the conference semifinals both years. They didn't have to pay him, or they didn't pay him because they didn't have to. They knew what kind of player that he was. He was a good complimentary player, and that's not to diminish who he was, but he was tremendously boosted by having Michael Jordan as a teammate.
What, was he, in your mind, on teams that lost in the playoffs? Because I hear what you're saying, that they didn't win championships without him. Were the Bulls better teams than those teams that they lost to? Were they better than, let's say, the Knicks at that point? Were they better than the rest of the Eastern Conference?
Without Michael?
Right.
No, they were not.
Thanks for your take on it. Like, I'll say this. I'm not faulting Scottie Pippen for not winning championships without Michael. Scottie Pippen, it's okay to say Scottie Pippen was one of the top five players in the NBA at that point, which is widely thought of by most. I mean, he did make the top 100 list, and I think Max is the one that said last week that you can make the argument he was the third best player in the NBA at that point. He can be one of the top five players in the NBA and his team not win because his team is not as competitive as the rest. When you look across the board at the NBA in that time, I think one of the things that we're forgetting is that the NBA was stacked. I mean, these teams across the board, it wasn't just dream teams. It wasn't even just a matter of Pippen coming in and saying, you know what, my Bulls team are going to come in and win and be better than everybody. When you look at one of the years, if you look just at 94, 95, and you start looking across the board, the number of teams that won 50 games that year, I mean, it's not just one or two. You're talking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 teams won 50 or more games that year, and the Bulls went 55 and 27. Like, I'm not going to turn that into some level of failure for Michael, or I'm sorry, for Scottie in that year when you start to look across the board and say, what was he up against? So I disagree with you that Scottie wasn't worth it to me. Tune into The Last Dance, by the way. It's the behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Bulls dynasty. The series continues Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Then listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Let me be clear. Scottie, definitely not Michael. He couldn't just will a team to victory on his own. He wasn't LeBron. But if the status is Michael or LeBron or bust, well, then I would make the argument, you know, Shaq was on some talented teams. He didn't just will his team to victory either. Don't forget the satisfying crunch of Nature Valley. Crunchy bars can keep your family going. And with whole grain oats and real delicious honey, it's really tasty too. Nature Valley oats and honey crunchy bars. Keep your take coming. You guys are stacked. You're fired up about it. So we'll let you chime in with your take. Whose legacy was affected the most because of Michael Jordan? 888 say ESPN 888-729-3776. Coming up, not only your take, but Mark Jackson has coached in the NBA before. Could he be making a return? He talked about it on First Take. You'll hear what he had to say next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. Congrats to me. Apparently, I'm hitting puberty right as we started. Fantastic. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm Jason Fitz. If you missed the first hour of today's show today, go check it out on demand in the First Take, Your Take podcast. Where you been? All right, we started 1 Eastern every day. But still, you can get the podcast brought to you by Capital One. Settle for average with a Capital One. You can open a savings account with a rate 5 times the national average. Welcome to banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. We'll get some more of your take coming up. Whose legacy was affected the most because of Michael Jordan? I'm going to take a second and just say, you guys rock. I mean, every single day we try and come up with a question we hope from First Take will engage you guys. It'll get you guys thinking and that we can have some fun with. And the fact is, every day you stack the phone lines with different ideas and different answers, and it makes it a lot of fun for us to do this with you every single day. So thanks for everybody that's on hold. We're going to get to you. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Before we get there, important, you know, mini update here. Stephen A., you know, has been a longtime fan of Mark Jackson, the former coach, and thinks that he should be the Knicks' next coach. He asks Mark flat out on First Take today about coming back and coaching in the NBA again.
Obviously, I've made noise even before the David Fizdale hire. I've been on the record for years believing that you should be the next head coach of the New York Knicks. I've been saying this for years. This is nothing new because I think that the Knicks situation is so bad, or at least it was before Leon Rose arrived, that you didn't just need a coach, but you needed a face of the franchise that could speak to New Yorkers, that New Yorkers would be inclined to trust and provide patience towards. That's what I believe about the New York Knicks. It's not just about an X's and O's guy. It's about a New Yorker speaking to New Yorkers and galvanizing the folks in New York to support the franchise in a fashion, not just walking through the turnstiles, but really supporting a culture change. Having said all of that, we've heard news that Tom Thibodeau may be considered for the head coaching job for the New York Knicks. I want to know what your thoughts are about that. I want to know what personal aspirations you still have to be a head coach in the National Basketball Association sometime in the near future.
Well, I want to say thank you to you guys for your support. And obviously, I hear the chatter, and it's appreciated. But I will say this. There are 30 NBA jobs, and so I don't minimize myself to one. I look forward to one day coaching again. It's a dream of mine. I'm not going to slip my wrist if I never coach again because I'm, like you talked about, I believe that what's mine is mine. That being said, when you talk about Tom Thibodeau, know him as a coach, know him as an assistant coach with Jeff Van Gundy, know him as a friend, outstanding basketball mind. I don't get into, you know, one job, but he's a coach that's proven and had great success, and nobody will outwork him. So I wish him nothing but the best and pulling for him and whatever his heart desires. As far as I'm concerned, I look forward to the day of coaching again. I had an incredible time in Golden State, coaching for 3 years, developing incredible relationships and having some success. And I look forward to the challenge of doing it once again somewhere.
ESPN Radio presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Whose legacy was most affected because of Michael Jordan? Taking some of your take on it. Let's go to Kevin in Alabama. Kevin, what do you got? Whose legacy was most affected?
By far and away, the person whose legacy was affected the most is going to end up having been LeBron James.
Tell me why.
Well, I mean, everybody keeps keying in on guys like Pippen and Malone and the Jazz teams. And, I mean, that's pretty obvious. But when you set a bar, MJ set a bar so high that even Kobe Bryant couldn't match that bar. I mean, you're talking about essentially an unbreakable record. I mean, you're talking about, like, Joe DiMaggio hitting 56 straight games, kind of. Like, it's an unbreakable barrier. MJ is the GOAT. He always will be the GOAT, and there's nothing LeBron can do about it, and that's what's going to end up going down in history.
I really like that take when you think about LeBron specifically and the measuring stick he's held up against. I laugh at it often that I know Michael Jordan undefeated in the finals. That's all we ever talk about. But we just simply forget that Michael Jordan lost in the playoffs several times. We don't acknowledge the fact that Michael Jordan struggled to get past the Pistons. We just acknowledge the finals record, and that's an impossible standard for anybody to measure up against, especially LeBron, who will always be compared to him. I want more of your take coming up on whose legacy was affected most because of Michael Jordan. Plus, Cam Newton, the backup, it might not be as crazy as you think. You'll hear about it next. First Take Your Take.